are so many people that will listen at a more convenient time than those that are on the live webinar. So I want to welcome everyone. This is Earl Bell, and I'd like to welcome you to our Monday Republic Magazine webinar. And we normally have these every week, and we've expanded to a Monday through Friday format. We're focusing on the Freedom Law School's 2010 Take Back America Now Health and Freedom Conference. That's going to be held in Southern California, March 12th through 15th, in Ontario, California, actually. More information on that conference is at freedomlawconference.com. So check that out. It's going to be incredible. Last week we featured speakers. This week we're featuring five more, and next week we'll continue the process. We hope to have each and every one of the speakers visit with us on the webinar so that we can get a real good idea of this incredible conference that's going to happen. So at any time in the webinar, if you'd like to speak with our special guest today, just dial star 2 on your phone keypad if you've dialed in. And if you're on the Internet, type your question into the question box just under the link that you use to access this. And it'd be helpful if you put your first name and a city and state and hit submit so that we can ask your question. So without further ado, I want to introduce Kim Thompson. And just to say briefly, Kim Thompson had a very physical childhood, including a great deal of dance and then martial arts. In early adulthood, a vehicle accident left her with 10 years of low back pain and neck pain. She tried the usual rounds of health professionals with no results. When regular yoga practice finally brought relief, she became committed to studying and exploring movement and body work. Kim has completed trainings in yoga, Feldenkrais, Bones for Life, Sounder Sleep, Craniosacral Therapy, and more. She blends these movement and body work modalities to meet the needs of her students and clients. And I want to welcome Kim Thompson, and I just, you know, wanted to say if you would tell us a little bit more about yourself and your journey, and share with us a little bit more about how this all came about and what you're doing today.
Sure, thank you. I am really doing this whole health adventure in a very thorough way. So when I was 21, I was in that vehicle accident, and I had a lot of physical pain for a lot of years. And the last 3.5 years, I've been dealing with some autoimmune and other health issues. So a lot of chronic fatigue and just sort of mineral deficiencies, various things. So then I've gotten really interested in the nutrition end. And so I teach currently I live in Gaithersburg, Maryland, which is outside Washington, D.C., and I teach 12 classes a week for the local city Parks and Recreation Department, which has been fantastic for me to grow and get to know people in my community. I am still exploring a lot of movement things from very different aspects, and then I have about 100 students a week that I get to take ideas into and see how 100 different bodies and personalities respond to the same things that I'm experimenting and exploring in with myself. I've been connected up then with some other organizations, the Weston Price Foundation and some other groups, just in trying to get some more information for my own self about more complete steps I can take towards my own good health. This has all been a really new thing for me. I was a very outdoors active child. When I graduated college, I bought a one-way ticket to China, and I spent 2 years traveling around and really being out and about and not having to think very much about my body or what I ate or how other people were getting along in the world. So it's been a very interesting journey for me to make personally, and then for me to meet so many other people who are struggling with some health issues and see, well, have I learned anything that could be useful to help move them along.
Okay. Well, what is your definition of freedom? Because I know we're talking about a health and freedom conference and that sort of thing.
Right. I'm really excited about the conference and seeing what these other folks have explored with it. For me, I've been playing with this a long time. I think really the essential feature of being human is free will. And that doesn't mean that you get to make choices, and if you make the wrong choice, you get punished for it. It just means that it's a human thing to make choices, to be creatively involved and present in your life, not just doing what you're told, or even running habitual programs of your own devising like a robot. And that is what I'm really doing mostly in the movement classes that I'm teaching. I think the two components of free will are really self-awareness and education. You need to know what you are doing, and it would be good for you to be aware of and able to evaluate other options so that you can choose what you'd like to do. So an action that results in you having more choices would be a better selection than a choice that boxes you into a corner. So when I'm working with students, we can look at people who are having knee pain and take a look at, well, what is really the anatomy of the knee? How does the knee relate to the foot and the hip and the spine? How are you walking, standing? How do you really use this leg? And would you like to continue using it that way? Because something about the way you're using it right now is causing you aggravation. And then I give them a few other options, and they can play around and see if there is a better way that they can move that causes them less discomfort. And what's really exciting for me is when we do a little bit of exploration of anatomy and movement in the class, and then they come back a week later and say, you know, I noticed that I do this thing when I'm climbing the stairs. That's just crazy. So now when I'm climbing the stairs, I slow down a little bit, and I notice how I'm using my legs.
Very good. Well, it sounds like you work a lot with conscious movement.
Yes. And really, my goal is not to make people be hyper aware or controlling of every tiny movement that they make. But if you can imagine that you have sort of an automatic pilot system that governs a lot of your physical processes. So probably you and the other people who are listening are not thinking about breathing consciously, and yet breathing continues in the background. And so frequently what happens is that this automatic pilot system is running some kind of program loops about how to use your legs or your spine or your shoulders, and they might or might not be really in your best interest. And so we can do some very conscious, slow explorations and bring some new information into the automatic pilot system. And after a few tries of that, frequently, you'll have some new options that become automatic on their own. But the goal is that you not be stuck, that you're not compulsively doing the same thing over and over again, but that you have choices. And if you'd like to go in and consciously interrupt the habitual way you tie your shoes or stand up from a chair, you can, but also that your automatic pilot system has several good options to choose from, so that when you're having a conversation and going for a walk, you don't have to put all your attention on your feet and your knees.
Interesting. Okay. And as far as what would you say would be the best way for people to achieve good health? Because everyone wants good health.
Well, I think, yeah, everyone wants good health. I think of good health as being the ability to do the things that you'd like to do in your life, to play with your children, to make love to your partner, contribute to your community, have a career that pleases you. And many of the students and the private clients that I see who have health challenges, for them, managing their symptoms really becomes a kind of part-time job. So many limits on what they can do and so much time spent visiting health practitioners or just trying to get comfortable. So because I've been really exploring this one from the inside out, my experience and observations are there are three main components to good health, and I find it really frustrating that in this national healthcare discussion, We focused all our attention really on getting insurance coverage for doctor visits, which is important, but really a minor piece of overall good health. So the three components I think everybody needs to be in what I think of as right relationship with are biochemistry. You need to be eating reasonable portions of nutritious foods, staying away from toxins. Movement, you'd like to have good body alignment and body usage. You need to be in right relationship to gravity. And you like to be in right relationship socially. We are one of the most social species on the planet. You really will benefit from having good relationships with your family, with spending time with friends, having a connection to your community, feeling appreciated for work that you do. So when something unusual happens, you might need medical help, but you're going to bounce back much more quickly from that injury or illness if these other three areas of your life are in good order. And really, if you're eating well and using your body well as you move and you're connected in a nice social web, I think that's going to proactively take care of a whole lot of things.
Sounds like it would. Why do you think that we have such widespread health problems in our population today? I mean, all you have to do is look around and it's obvious. But why is that so?
I think that our current way of life is really a new thing under the sun. I think never before in history have whole populations of people eaten fake food and had a crazy relationship to gravity and live in very fragmented and disconnected social lives. So what we're doing now is really a new experiment, and I think it's not working very well for us.
Well, you know, you have said, this is an expression you've said before, that we have a crazy relationship to gravity. What do you mean by that?
This, one of the other modalities that I have been studying and really benefiting from tremendously is the work of a woman named Noelle Perez, and she has been studying posture in a variety of cultures for about 50 years. If you look at statistics of pain, about 80% of adults living in modern industrialized societies will be laid up with acute low back pain at least once in their lives. Just down and out, you can't move for a couple of days because your back hurts. In societies of people who are living more traditional lifestyles, less industrialized, less than 5% of the population ever suffers acute low back pain. So Noelle she started in 1959. She wanted to find out, well, what are 95% of those populations doing that keeps them pain-free? And she was especially interested to study populations who age really well, where the 70, 80, 90-year-olds can still stand and walk and bend and lift things. So she did a lot of traveling and a lot of anatomical study, and she really observed how these groups of people walk and sit, stand, bend, sleep, and she's still at it. The last time that my teacher went to Paris to train at Noelle's studio, Noelle was off in the mountains of Switzerland to spend time with a group of shepherds who habitually stand on one leg for hours at a time. So the brief summary of her 50 years of work is this. She noticed that what all these people had in common was a habit of stacking their bones so that all their major weight-bearing joints were in line with gravity. They don't slump, they don't thrust their head forward, they don't push their hips forward or out to one side, they don't lift their chests and throw their shoulders back. When they sit, their weight is even on their sit bones and their spine is erect and centered. When they stand, the weight of the upper body travels straight down the long bones of their legs. She has distilled 50 years of study into a set of basic guidelines for alignment in everyday activities. In French, she calls the work aplomb, which refers to the plumb line. And in English, it's called balance. And the beauty of this work is that when you really line your joints up in this way, you find a real sense of ease and effortless. So gravity doesn't weigh you down. It just passes through your skeleton, which is designed to take the force of gravity. And your soft tissues are even on either side of the joint, so there is no constant contraction or overstretching of any of the muscles, and there is no torquing or twisting of your ligaments. The skeletal frame is really positioned according to its design, and then the soft tissues really have a nice life. Walking becomes light and easy, and sitting and standing can really be experienced as rest between activities.
So you create an incredible efficiency.
Tremendously efficient. She noticed that people in these traditional societies are conserving energy all the time. There's really no wasted effort.
That's really important. And so
there's no extra strain. They don't grind their joints. They don't overuse some muscles and not get into others. And they're just living their everyday lives. They're not jogging. They're not going to the gym. You know, they're not setting aside extra time to work on their body. They're just moving along through their daily activities.
Wow. So they create greater harmony. It makes a more harmonious life through the balance that they create.
It really does because, well, so I went to California for a week-long intensive training, and the teacher did a lot of hands-on work kind of pulling me into this shape so I could really experience it. And she asked me, well, how do you feel now? And I said, timeless. I just felt like I could have been sitting there forever. I could sit there for the rest of the day. There was no effort. I could just witness the world go by with no impatience or, you know, that little busy distractedness so many people have that they can't sit still. And there was just a tremendous sense that I was in my center and allowed my mind to calm down, that I could really just be present without any pulls anywhere.
Well, where can our listeners learn more about balance?
Well, if you're headed to Paris, you could look up Noelle's studio. But in North America, the best source I know of in English is to take classes with Jean Couch. She has been studying Noelle's work for over 20 years, and she still gets back to Paris a couple times a year and has the French teachers come to her studio. Her studio is called the Balance Center, and it is located in Palo Alto, California. And she also leads week-long workshops at Esalen. So you can contact Jean Couch at her website, which is balancecenter.com. And if you check now, be sure to check back in another month or two also, because she's been involved in a big project to improve the website and get a blog up and get a lot more information in. So there's even more coming. If you cannot get to California, then you could easily get one of Jean's. She's got instructional DVDs, and you can get those through her website. And there's also a great book written by Kathleen Porter, who has studied with Jean Couch, and that's called Ageless Spine, Lasting Health by Kathleen Porter. And that was actually the book that got me started. I got a hold of it through Amazon or some places. Just regular booksellers can get it. And I started following the guidelines in the book, and what I felt was so interesting that I looked for an opportunity to get out to Palo Alto and really have some of the hands-on supervised work.
Okay. We have, I guess it's not a question, but we just love Phil from London. He accesses us via the Internet. And he always has excellent comments, and the occasional question is really intelligent. But he, Phil from London says, "Hi, Earl. You're a trooper. I hope you get well soon. Your guest is talking a lot of sense. Best wishes." I was just thinking that. Kim, you're talking a lot of sense.
Well,
everything you're saying I resonate with.
Great.
We need to remember those things.
There is a man who has translated some Indian spiritual texts and different things, and he, Eknath Iswaran, and he has a quote that I can approximate pretty well, that there are natural laws like gravity that we can't break. We can only break ourselves against them. And it just makes sense if you're going to begin experimenting with options or just going through your life to get to know what are some of those things that are non-optional. I mean, as long as you're going to be here on Earth, you have got to be relating to gravity every moment of your life. So do you want to be positioned in such a way that you experience that as oppressive? Or do you want to position yourself in a way that gravity is supportive and that you can really kind of play and dance with it?
Well, I want to remind everyone that we're speaking with Kim Thompson, and she's optimizedmovement.com, I believe. Is that your main website?
Well, it's only one site, so there are two names that will get you there. The shorter one to type in is ktmovement.com. And the KT are just my initials, Kim Thompson, ktmovement.com.
Okay. So they'll both go to the same place then?
They both go to the same place.
Okay, great. All right, and then I don't know, do you take any calls for people who want to contact you that way? Maybe they're listening on the phone line and don't have internet.
You're looking at opening up for questions?
Well, no, I just meant that if people want contact information for you and say they're not internet savvy, so they can't go to your website, is there another way to get information?
Sure. They could call my number, which is 301-275-0880.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, I know that there's so much talk of exercise, and I just wonder how would exercise fit within what you're talking about?
So let me back up just a little bit and say that Noel began studying yoga in 1959 with B.K.S. Iyengar. And one of the things he noticed about her was that her poses looked crazy. And in fact, she just looked, he said she was off her axis, by which he meant really the axis of gravity. And he noticed that she was off her axis when she was standing, when she was walking, anything she was doing. And so what Noel finds is that most people in these modern industrial societies almost need a kind of pre-yoga class before they can go in and start really exploring yoga poses, because the yogis already had a functional relationship with gravity and knew where all their body parts were. They weren't up in their heads so much like we are. And I think that for a lot of exercise, people almost need a little bit of pre-exercise to give them a bit of a reset in their bodies so that they won't get injured. I have a lot of students who are in chronic pain now who really exercise their way into chronic pain. And many of them really don't have good communication between their body and their mind. I see this so often that chronic pain students frequently can't feel anything until it hurts. So if I ask them to do a gentle movement and notice what happens in their spine, they really can't feel it. Or, well, what is your shoulder doing? And they just don't know until it hurts. And then frequently they'll comment things like, oh, but the burn feels good. And we've really got a lot of people who have a real disconnect with their own physical bodies. And the only way they really experience themselves as being alive is when they're in pain. And so you get these kind of hurt-so-good gym workouts, which is not really good for over a long spell of time. It's sort of a warrior mentality that will get you through a battle, but you don't age well that way. So what I work with a lot of my students, is really an idea of structural integrity. Do you have a center? And do you have a center that can hold itself without collapsing so that your postural muscles? I mean, people are real interested in core strength, but what are your core muscles going to do? Well, they should be helping preserve the integrity of your spine, of your center line. So when you strengthen those muscles by doing things like sit-ups, which really distort the long line of the spine, you're just sort of practicing a form of collapse, as opposed to preserving a long stacked up line of your spine while you move your limbs around in space or while you move your core around in space. So here's where I begin to wonder if I'm making sense. Your spine, in between each vertebra, there's a disc, and in the center of each disc is a nucleus. And you can move each of those joints a little bit, and that's fine. But if you're going to pick up a heavy object and you've rounded your back, then each nucleus in that rounded space has been pushed a little bit towards the back of the disc. If you pick up a heavy weight, then you run the risk of rupturing that disc. The nucleus actually breaks, and the disc changes shape, and it can push on your spinal cord or your spinal nerves. So So what you'd like is that your core muscles have kind of a reflex response, that when you're picking up heavy objects or you're moving around in space, they are looking to line up your skeletal framework so that all your joints are centered, that you're not torquing or twisting anything, that there are no shearing forces traveling through the body. So when you practice this kind of structural integrity, then you can go to exercise at the gym or go for a run or anything, and you will get the benefit of the exercise without needing to recover from your workout.
Wow.
And you also don't necessarily need, if you have this kind of structural integrity and awareness, I haven't been able to work out that much lately just because I'm dealing with so many fatigue issues. But I'm also cooking all my own food because I'm working on getting well, so I'm off processed foods. And when I stand at the sink cleaning vegetables or washing dishes or anything, I'm really aware of how my pelvis is placed and my spine, and I can feel the muscles in my legs and in my belly working. They're on duty, and they're helping out. So it's not a... You're not only using your muscles when you're exercising. They can be present and on duty in your daily life as well.
Okay. Surely, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Let me just make this point, too. We have some crazy ideas about strength. Strength for a muscle is really springiness. It's elasticity, the ability to contract and also to elongate. And so all this exercise focus on creating a hard, sculpted body is really crazy because your muscles aren't supposed to be that level of resting tension all the time. If you think about your jaw, there's a resting tone for the muscles of your jaw, and that keeps your jaw closed so that your teeth are close together or lightly touching, and your lips are lightly touching. And that's just resting tone. The muscles are working, but that's different than when you clench your teeth and press your lips together. And if you and the listeners go ahead and do that now, really bite your teeth and press your lips together, you'll probably find that this high tone radiates tension down into your neck and shoulders and that your breathing suddenly becomes really shallow.
Yep.
Did that resonate for you at all?
Yep.
Okay, so go ahead and relax your jaw and your lips. So the other possibility is like after you've been to the dentist and you've been anesthetized and then your jaw hangs open and your lips hang open and you're drooling. And so then that's really low tone for those muscles of the jaw. So what you want is resting tone, that the muscle is ready to work when it needs to work and it's relaxed and gets out of the way when it's not needed. So if you think about your belly, you don't want to be clenching your belly all the time. If you and the listeners do that now, go ahead and really pull your belly in because you're trying to look really good. And you'll probably notice that other areas get tight and also that your breathing quality is diminished. And so who wants to go through their life holding their belly tight all the time and not breathing very well? So go ahead and let that go. And then there's kind of a slumpy posture where your ribs really lean on your abdominal organs, and that gives you a pot belly. It's that posture. So you have these sort of drooling belly muscles because they're not engaged at all, and the upper body is leaning on them, pushing them out, and that's why the belly gets big. It's really a structure over time issue. What you'd like is to have your skeletal framework stacked up properly so that the belly returns to a resting tone. Then there's no unusual constriction on the abdominal organs, so you can digest your food easily. And those muscles are ready to work when you need them, and they're out of the way when they're not needed.
Very interesting. It sounds like that what you're talking about is living our lives with less and less stress. What about strength training? I know that there's a lot of people really, go for that, and there's some controversy on it, but what do you think?
I have nothing against strength. I just think a lot of folks need kind of this reset to have structural integrity. They need to have a good body-mind connection because most people in pain don't. You want your body talking back to you so that if you've done enough for today, you know it, and you don't have to wait for a day or two to find out that you did too much. You want your muscles to be able to work and be able to rest. If you're looking at strengthening a muscle, well, what is the function of this muscle, and what is it going to be able to do when it becomes stronger? Hopefully, it's going to be working as part of a synergistic team. But we don't usually think of our muscles as part of teams. We sort of fragmented ourselves. And so we go to the gym and we do exercises and we think of targeting specific muscles. And one example is the belly. So a lot of people really, really, really strengthen the abdominal muscles, but they don't necessarily balance them with the low back. And if you have a tucked tail kind of posture, like that suck and tuck that is rampant throughout many worlds of exercise, you combine the suck and tuck posture with really tight abdominals, and the abdominal muscles can overpower the muscles of the pelvic diaphragm, and you can end up with some serious organ prolapse issues. So if you're going to strengthen a muscle, are you strengthening the whole team of muscles, or are you unbalancing a team? Also, I would say that you're not a machine. We are not really meant to do repetitive linear movements. Instead of just, you know, bicep curls with a dumbbell where you only work the joint in one direction, you can get a fabulous workout putting on some music that you really like, strapping yourself into ankle and wrist weights or picking up dumbbells and really dancing around your living room. You can give your you know, make some real spirally, circly movements with your arms and legs. You can have a lot of fun. You can get your heart rate up. You can give a challenge to your muscles. But they can be doing something more interesting than just a back-and-forth linear movement. If you are going to work out with weights or anything, you really want to be present. You don't want to just check out and watch television or listen to your iPod. You want to be there. Are you grinding any joints? Are you still lining up your spine? Are you clenching your teeth or tensing up your neck? Are you breathing continuously or do you hold your breath as you're working out? So you would like to be a unified, harmonious whole and not fragmented.
Okay. We have Shirley in Riverside. A physical therapist pulled my neck and now I have a pinched nerve with both hands and arms tingling. Can you help me? Any advice for Shirley?
Well, this is not the kind of thing I usually do over the phone.
So Shirley has
the physical trauma of the injury that happened when that was done. But it would be interesting if she could also notice, are there things that she does that increase or lessen the discomfort? So, does she have a habit of clenching her teeth? If she moves her lower jaw forward or backward and stays there for a couple breaths, does she notice any more ease? There is the injury that happens, and then frequently there is the contraction of the muscles around the site of injury to help protect and stabilize a joint that's been traumatized. And then that tension can itself become part of the problem. So she's got the trouble at the place where it happened. But then there's also, does she have additional tension in response to that trouble, which is contributing to more discomfort and pressure on nerves going down into the hands? There are some gentle movement explorations I can suggest for her if she'd like to call or send an email about her situation, but I don't think there's that much that I can do useful on a call like this.
Sure.
For that specific situation.
That makes sense. Yes, she may have been trying to determine if you thought you could help her out if she contacted you further.
Yes. I don't know what I can't promise anything, but I could give her some things to try, and she could. What I have found for myself, because I've been on these two big journeys, one about physical pain and movement, and one about really biochemistry, is that you might have to try a whole lot of different things before you get something that really makes a difference for you. And then I really encourage people to try different things so that they're not just going to one after another of a practitioner in the same modality. And I would recommend, too, as part of the self-awareness piece, that people take their own personality into account when they're looking at things to try. I like to learn stuff, and I like to be connected and in control with what's going on with my own body. I have family members who don't. They would rather just go to the doctor and take a pill or have surgery, and when they get that, they usually get a reasonable result from it. So the kind of work that I do is much more helpful for people who really want to be engaged and learning and understanding. And that's not going to work for everyone. So if you also take who you are as part of the puzzle when you're looking at what things can you try, I think that helps too.
You know, it sounds like that what a lot of what you're talking about is where a person can take charge of their own health. They can do what I would call self-care rather than looking towards others to do it for them. I mean, there are needs for that for others in certain situations, but there's a lot more we could do for ourselves. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, you're the one in there, and it's you that has the issue. Hopefully, the doctors and the other health practitioners are going to be valuable resource people for you because they've studied it more. It's nice if you can go into the doctor and they know what tests. Another example for me is that it looks like a whole lot of the fatigue I've had the last couple years is probably due to a parasite. I've had the thyroid issues, but I also went swimming and kayaking in a river in West Virginia just a couple months before all my symptoms came crashing down. And so I went into the doctor last week, and she knew what tests to run, and she knew what anti-parasite meds to try, and I didn't have to go study parasites. I just had to go in and say, you know, I think this is a good possibility. And then she could come in with all of her information and tell me just the bits that I needed to know. You know, I would also suggest for Shirley to do a little bit of looking in her area and see if there are any Feldenkrais practitioners. It's a very gentle, hands-on movement exploration modality. And she can look on my website. I've got a link to there. Or go to feldenkrais.com, FeldenKrais. And they have a practitioner finder list. And that's because what she's got going on is something that someone really would need to be in the room working with her to see what they can do.
Okay. What do you think of Pilates? That's real big right now. Is that a fairly big thing?
My most honest response is that I'm not really qualified to have an opinion. I have only taken a series of Pilates mat classes is probably 10 years ago. I have a few concerns about Pilates. I think that they do a lot of flexion. So does this make sense? Your spine can be in this nice centered shape, or it can be rounded forward, or it can be arched backwards. So the rounded forward is flexion, and the arched backward is extension. And Pilates tends towards whatever I've looked at seems like it's more than half flexion, which is what people are doing when they're hunched at their computers all day anyway. And I think that the little bit of Pilates that I have seen tends a little to be more muscle-focused rather than skeletal structure-focused. But mostly I would say that your experience with Pilates is going to depend on you and the teacher that you have. Because a great Pilates teacher is going to be fantastic. And you can get hurt or injured under the direction of any lousy teacher of any modality. So I guess I just would encourage people that if they want to try Pilates, to stay present and notice, does it seem to be a positive force in their life, or is it contributing to some of the challenges that they have?
Okay. What do you say to Rolfing and Hellerwerk?
I don't really know anything about Hellerwerk. I don't know very much about Rolfing, but I have taken some classes with Tom Myers, who used to teach at the Rolf Institute, and he does some beautiful work that he calls anatomy trains, where he's looking at deep tissue, the releasing things that are knotted up in the deep connective tissue, and it's just beautiful. So it's going to depend on what your situation is. If you have had an accident or a habit over many years where you've got some real deep tissue knots, then something like Rolfing or anatomy trains is going to be wonderful to help get that stuff out. But I think that you still need to have a functional relationship to gravity, and you still need to know how to use your body well. Otherwise, you'll just generate knots again. So the piece that's wonderful about Rolfing and anatomy trains is that it can go in and get stuff that's really deep that probably wouldn't respond very well or very quickly to just a change in habits. But it won't necessarily help change your habits. So I think that you would want to do Rolfing in connection with something else for a more complete shift.
Okay. And do you have some concerns about particular types of yoga? Like, I know Iyengar is kind of intense, and I'm just wondering if there's any other types that might be concerns with. I know there's one, I forget the name of it, but you turn the temperature in the room way up, and you do just all these rounds.
But I go back to my comment about Pilates, that it's really going to depend on you and on the teacher. If you look at the real core principles of yoga, one of the first ones is ahimsa, which is nonviolence. And most people, for some reason, interpret that as you have to be a vegetarian. But I'm not. And I look at it in the movement class. Are you being violent with yourself on your mat? Or are you showing yourself some compassion and proceeding in a gentle, exploratory way? So if you have a teacher who pushes you to go deeper or stay longer when your own body is indicating that you're done, then that could be a problem. If your own personality is to go until you really feel the burn, that's not nonviolence. So I think there's a lot of wonderful stuff right in, and yoga is about bringing your body and mind together. So the other style of yoga that you mentioned there is actually called Bikram yoga, where they turn the heat up, and it's really going to depend on you and on the teacher. I actually was certified in the Bikram program in 2001 because I had all that low back and neck pain for 10 years. I did some Iyengar yoga and liked it, but I still hurt. I went to the Bikram studio in my town, and after the first class, I noticed something real different about my ribs. So I signed up for a package, and I kept going, even in the middle of the heat. And 3 months later, I was out of pain. So I know people who have gotten hurt doing Bikram. I know Bikram teachers who really push people to work harder, harder, harder. But it was Bikram yoga that took me out of pain. And I taught that for several years and really enjoyed it. And I'm just doing some other things right now. But really, what style of yoga to do anything, it's going to depend on the match of you and your teacher, and especially how you are relating to your body.
Well, it sounds like that you're just basically saying that it's important for us to just be as conscious as possible and believe in ourselves and to know that there's an inner part of us that just knows what is the right thing or what is correct for us in any given time.
You can't check out. When you go into anywhere, you need to stay present and notice what's going on, how you're responding to it. Your body will give you fabulous feedback, and you just need to be open to what the signals are and understanding them. I tend to be a very verbal person. I was a literature major before I got into all this stuff. So I tend to organize my experiences a lot with characters and storylines and language, conversations. So I went to Tom Myers training, right, which comes out of the Rolfe method, and it's a lot of deep tissue work, which is not the kind of stuff that I normally do. So we were learning techniques to do deep tissue work on other people. And I pretty quickly got the message from my hands that was really pretty clear from the joints in my fingers of, I don't know what you're playing with, but don't get any big ideas. We are not putting up with this much pressure on a regular basis. We'll help you get through the weekend, but that's it. And so I think Tom teaches wonderful work, and I think his anatomy understanding and explanation is beautiful. But it's been a low priority for me to get back to his stuff just because I know that my hands would really suffer if I were to continue trying to do that.
Okay. Well, I want to remind everyone we're speaking with Kim Thompson. If you would like to join the conversation, if you're on the phone line, just dial *2 on your phone keypad and we'll be able to unmute your line so you can speak with Kim. And if you are on the Internet, then just go ahead and type your question into the question box there and submit it so that we can make sure the question gets asked. And I wanted to ask, how can listeners get better at tuning into their own bodies? I mean, how would they actively go about that?
You know, that's a process that I work on with my students in classes. Partly, we just do small, gentle movements and look at how much can you feel, or challenging yourself to do unfamiliar movements. One of the things I tell my students is, if you can imagine that your brain cells don't ever experience the world directly, right? Your fingers are out experiencing the world directly. Your eyes are really perceiving light. But your brain cells, it's almost like they're watching TV. They get signals coming along the nerve pathways, but the brain cells don't ever get out and walk around in the world. So sometimes I'll ask people to do things with their toes or with their feet, and I watch them struggle, and it almost looks like there are no brain cells watching the foot channel. And so by asking them to do something unfamiliar and them trying, they almost start the practice of channel surfing among those brain cells, trying to look for a signal. Is there any way that I can relate to my foot? So you partly just need to set aside some time where that's what's going on. You're not busy off in your head thinking, and you're not really trying to accomplish an outcome or a goal. The event of the moment is to just spend some time noticing your foot, seeing if you can get information from it. Noticing how does your leg feel when you use it one way versus another, so that the event of the moment is really that information gathering and evaluating rather than ignoring signals so that you can get a job done.
Okay. I think that one of the things about a lot of our listeners are very much not too trusting or wanting to give over their power to any institutions, be they major corporations, the news media, the governments, that type of thing, authority figures, and they question authority constantly. But it's interesting because I think you bring an element in that's kind of needed, in that people need to learn to then in turn trust themselves and their own feelings, intuition, perception, to know what is correct and what is right for them. In any instance. So,
yes, and for those people especially, I would love for them to have this really clear connection to gravity so that they don't walk through their life with their tail tucked between their legs looking like a beggar with a sort of a collapsed posture. I would like that when they have had an insight, or they would like to challenge something, or when they are trying to protect the rights of farmers to grow food for us, that they really stand supported by the earth, and that when they speak, they're not coming out through a whole bunch of congestion, that they're able to really project their, to communicate their vision that it comes out clearly and that we see it and recognize that there's something authentic and authoritative about this person. Not authoritative in the power over, but that, oh, this is someone to reckon with. This is not just a weak supplicant.
Okay. What would you say would be the major influence that made you decide, yes, I'm definitely going to study and teach movement?
I'm sorry, the major ideas?
The major stimulus or impetus, what caused you to make that decision to say, I'm going to definitely study and teach movement?
You know what? It was the pain. I was in that vehicle accident, and I heard so much for so long, and I can remember at one point sort of praying, okay, if I have to go through this, at least let me map the territory so I could be useful to somebody else. And then it was such an astonishing relief to come out of pain after that many years that it got me really interested to know more about, well, how do I use my body? How do other people use theirs? And what other tools can I gather? And I have never been happier or felt more like I'm in the right place than I have since I started really doing this work. I go to trainings whenever I can. I usually get to several a year. And I'm always looking for things that come in from a different perspective so that it keeps me in a little bit that beginner mind and it keeps me seeing things in a fresh way. But it really was my own experience of how much pain can limit a life. And one of the things I find so satisfying is that a lot of my chronic pain people who come to me, it's like a part-time job, the amount of time they spend going to practitioners and getting through their lives. And they're such interesting people who would like to contribute more to their families and communities. And I just think, well, wouldn't we all be better off if we could free this person up so that they could really be part of, be a more active part of the world around them? It's just it's wonderful, wonderful job.
Yeah, that's well said. It definitely is. What other movement resources can you recommend?
I really recommend the best starting places are Balance. If you go to balancecenter.com, Jean can hook you up with some things. And also the pelvic rotator cuff work of Janet Hulme, who is a physical therapist. And her website is phoenixcore.com. She is a PT out of Montana who has been working in women's health, especially for about 40 years. And she looks at this synergistic team of muscles that she calls the pelvic rotator cuff that include the internal, some of the internal and external rotators of the hip joints, the belly, the low back, and then the breathing and pelvic diaphragms. And she reports great success with reversing or preventing incontinence and organ prolapse, and also clearing up a lot of back pain and knee pain. I went to one of her trainings last spring, and when I do her work on my own at home, I really feel much more like a unified whole, like this core team of posture muscles are working together. And when I go out for a walk or do anything else, I just feel like more of me is working together. So it's the pelvic rotator cuff work. And the phoenixcore.com is the website. And once you've got those in place, you can just see where you want to go. The Feldenkrais method is wonderful to explore more of yourself and maybe unwind some long-standing patterns of tension. The Bones for Life method came out of the Feldenkrais work. The website is bonesforlife.com. And Ruthie Alon, who created that, she is looking at movements that really help you feel how force travels through your skeleton so that you come to align your joints very well for safety and also really talk to the bones in the language of pressure. And she's had some nice results with actually improving bone health. So people who are concerned about osteopenia, osteoporosis especially, that would be a place to go. But it's also just a wonderful modality for feeling how you can arrange your structure to handle force. If you're looking for something more like a workout exercise, Bob Cooley has a great program called Resistance, Flexibility, and Strength Training. And I don't have his website right in front of me. I think it is meridianstretching.com, but I've definitely got it on my website. I went to a training with some of his senior staff, and that's really nice. They're good, safe workouts to target 8 major muscles in the legs and 8 major muscles in the arms and shoulders. And he has worked with everybody from people with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue up to some of the Olympic medal winners. So it really can be adjusted to fit anyone, and it's a nice, nice workout. If your listeners haven't already heard about Continuum, the work of Emily Conrad, that's wonderful, too, for just really exploring your fluid nature. I mean, our bodies are mostly water, and she's done beautiful work with kind of getting more in touch with that fluid core of yourself. So those are some things I would recommend. And if you do go to my website, which is ktmovement.com, there is a link from my bio page to training, and you can see the things that I have studied. And there's a link from that page. There's also a link from the resources page to a little bit more information about the trainings that I've taken and the websites that will take you directly to the work of the people that taught me.
Okay, and I suppose if people want to contact you by email, the email is there
in the website. They can come through there.
Okay, and if those that don't have internet access, that phone number again that they could make
301-275-0880. And if they do have internet website, the web access, definitely check now, but also check back in, I don't know, a few months, because I have really been slowed down by this parasite thing. But I'm hoping now that that gets cleared up and that I really would like the website to be a very good resource for people. And so my hope is that as I begin to get some more energy, I'll be able to invest a little more time into the site. So there should be some more, a list of books and articles and other things that they might find real interesting.
Great. We've got Benson in Colton, California. He says, I got on the conference call late. Does Kim have a website that does training? If not, what is her contact number? You just gave that out, so we're good there.
I teach public classes right now, and I have led some presentations and classes at conferences, but at the moment I'm not really leading trainings or teacher trainings of any kind. But if you do go to my site, ktmovement.com, there are links that will put you through to the people that I have trained with, and they're all excellent. If I have a talent for anything, I have a really good talent for finding good teachers. So I highly recommend them.
You know, one thing I noticed about you, Kim, is that you're very much about finding out what good things are out there, what you can recommend and share with others, and you freely give out resources. You know, some people will just basically promote themselves and give out what they have as the source for their whole area. But it looks like that you find many good things and say, you could go with this, you could check that out, you could check that out, and that's great. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I feel so fortunate, the riches I've been able to tap into. And I would love for people to go right to the source for those.
That's great. Well, now, you teach about 100 students each week, and you work with private clients, too. You must stay pretty busy.
You know, I do. I've been able to arrange the schedule so that I have some days that are quite busy. Like Thursdays, I teach 6 classes. And then other days are much quieter and unscheduled. So I've been able to sort of pulse my days. So I've got some variety in what I do, and there are days when I'm on, and then there are days when I can be a little slower if I need to.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, you've been extremely clear and concise with what you've said. It's almost hard to even think of what other questions people would have. I think that's why we probably haven't had a whole lot of questions, because it's just so crystal clear. It's simplistic, and that's the way things should be.
Well, thank you. This is my first webinar interview, so I'm pleased that I've been able to pull things together that way. Thank you very much.
Well, certainly, absolutely. Well, in just a moment, you might think about if there's anything that you had thought you might want to mention and hadn't mentioned yet, or you have some parting comments that you'd like to share with us, that would be great.
I do have one. I would really encourage people. We really are one of the most social species on the planet. And if there is something deep within each of us that wants to be in harmony with the people around us, it's a little unsettling to feel very different. And if your listeners are the kind of independent thinkers that are really questioning and challenging things, I really encourage them to come to the Health and Freedom Conference. It can be wonderful to, I think the speakers are going to be great, but it can also be wonderful for you on many levels just to be among a group of people who are all thinking and looking and exploring and investigating. And the information, you will, I'm sure, know more about the conference than I do, but the flyers and the conversations I've had with the staff members, the conference is free. They would really appreciate help with paying the bills, but if finances are an issue for you, you don't have to pay to go, but you do need to pre-register. So so I'll be there, and I look forward to meeting any listeners that want to come. But they've got a nice variety of speakers on many different topics, and even just being among those kinds of people can be nourishing in itself.
That's so true. I've noticed that in the past. I've made some tremendous associations with people that are attending. It's nice to be able to connect with the presenters there, because when they're not speaking, most of them seem to stay and participate with most of the conference, if not all of it. And it's a great opportunity to spend some time chatting with them and finding out more information. I would say also the conference has very unique vendors, unlike you'll find anywhere else. So the presenters and the vendors and the attendees are very unique, quite a combination, very, I would call it in a way, kind of eclectic in a very positive way. And, of course, we're speaking about Freedom Law School's 2010 Take Back America Health and Freedom Conference, happening in Southern California, March 12th through 15th. And for more information on that, go to freedomlawconference.com. And we're going to be, like we spoke with Kim, with Kim today, we're going to be continuing through this week with more speakers from that conference. Just to give you an idea, we've got Byron Dale tomorrow addressing the question, is there really a simple plan or solution to this Great Depression we are sliding into? We've got Wednesday, we've got Nancy Appleton on why do most Americans have no clue that they are victims to a sweet suicide. That should be very interesting. We've even got our managing editor and the head of the Restore the Republic, as well as numerous other activities, Gary Franchi, on Thursday. He's going to be addressing the question, have concentration camps been built in the USA, and other sobering questions. And then Friday, we're going to have Steve Hempling addressing, I believe he's with the Free Enterprise Society, why does the IRS keep saying that the income tax is based on voluntary compliance? So you don't want to miss any of them. Certainly we really appreciate we appreciate Kim, you being with us today. And the replay of this and other webinars can be found at republicmagazine.com/webinar. We invite you to share the webinars that we have posted there with your friends. Send them out to your list. Spread the information. That's how it happens. It's a groundswell of person-to-person sharing of information. And we'll certainly look for everyone to join us with our next webinar. I would like to thank you for joining us today. And I'm Earl Bell. Tomorrow, hopefully, my voice will be a lot better. today's speaker has been Kim Thompson with Optimize Movement. And once again, her website is ktmovement.com. It's See you all tomorrow. This officially ends our webinar. Good day, everyone.
The moderator has left the conference.